Gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta get home before the morning comes. What if I'm late? Got a big day, gotta get home before the sun comes up. Up and away, got a big day, sorry can't stay. I gotta run, run, yeah. Gotta get home, pick up the phone, gotta let the people know I'm gonna be
What's
late.
Happening, Las Vegas? It's your boy Jeffrey with a G with another unbelievable episode of Vegas Nonstop. We have an unbelievable show for you today. NASCAR weekend, we have NASCAR driver Brandon Brown in studio with us, sports analyst and entrepreneur Amal Shah, and one of our favorite guests, former MLB pitcher Josh Towers. With me as always for the last 9.7 years, the ambassador of fun, the master of mayhem, and the wizard of whoopee, Jonathan J. Scott.
Jeffrey with a G, line one, go ahead. That was the best introduction I've heard in 9 years.
At least in 5 minutes.
How's everybody doing? Everybody good?
Yeah, man, how are you?
Yeah, great, great. Yeah? I'm excited. It's a big, big weekend.
Huge weekend.
In Las Vegas, there's so much going on. Thrilled that we've got Josh and Amal in studio today. Josh is going to talk about baseball, and Amal is going to talk about food. No, he's going to talk about baseball. We're going to talk a little bit about hockey. We're going to talk about NBA. But first, we have to talk about NASCAR.
Big weekend here. NASCAR weekend here in Vegas up at the Raceway. Obviously, we have an unbelievable guest here with us all the way from Virginia.
Yes, Brandon Brown, born September 14th, 1993, an American professional stock car racing driver, currently competes part-time in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, driving the number 86 Chevrolet Camaro for Brandon Built Motorsports. How did that? Was that pretty good?
Was that like a racing intro? I like that you threw in the birth date with it. That was, I haven't had that before.
1993.
That was a good year.
I have pants older than you.
I think I'm wearing them right now.
So tell us a little bit about your background. I know you're from Virginia, and you know our friend Tony Lozano introduced us, and he's big in NASCAR and big in racing. And your dad is your coach and engineer and all the above, or somewhere in there.
He's the big cheese on the team. You know, he owns everything. So, you know, we kind of. I'm more or less there to do what he says. But no, a little bit. I guess a little bit about me.
What a good boy you are.
Yeah, I like to think so. I guess a little bit about me. I just graduated college at Coastal Carolina University this past December. Yeah, the Chanticleers World Series champs for for baseball. So we'll take that.
I'm going to go off of Wikipedia, which is always wrong.
And it's
right that it's always wrong. Brandon Brown first started racing when he was 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
Driving go-karts at King George Speedway before moving to dirt track racing, winning the 2006 World Karting Association Mid-South Region Junior Championship. 2 years later, won the Junior Restricted Light and Heavy Division Championship, followed by the VKDA Series. What's that stand
Ooh,
for?
So close. VDKA.
BKDA. Isn't that what I said?
It's VDKA, and that's the Virginia Dirt Karting Association.
See? Wikipedia is always wrong. It says VKDA. And Junior Restricted Light and Heavy... In 2010, right. Brandon began competing in the Wheeland All-American Series with family-owned Brandon Built Motorsports, winning a race, eventually the Virginia Rookie of the Year Award.
Yeah.
True Virginias for lovers?
It is. That's why I brought my girlfriend here.
That's why you've got Taylor here in the studio. Yeah. What a pretty girl she is. Next year, you won the three races at Old Dominion Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good so far.
Yeah.
In 2014, so far, so good. Brandon made his Camping World Truck Series debut at Iowa Speedway, finishing 25th after starting 27th. Made two more starts in the year with a best finish of 19th at New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Following year, attempted 8 races but failed to qualify for 3. 2016, you were at Daytona. You were just at Daytona?
Yep. Yeah,
Two weeks ago?
Yeah, we just ran there 2 weeks ago.
How'd that go?
It went okay. The race wasn't as exciting as we all had hoped it would be. You know, a lot of people fell into single line racing, which kind of, in my opinion, sucks. But
I don't know what that means.
Explain what that means to the listeners.
I guess for the listeners, that's where when you see that's just watching cars make circles. You know, that's the stereotype. Is just everybody
drive around to the left all day long.
That's right.
Lots of left turns.
A quarter mile turn left. It was just everybody was nose to tail, and nobody was really getting competitive and getting racy. And
why does that happen? Does it have to do with the elements of the track or weather or other things?
I think it was because the night before, because NASCAR always runs 3 races a weekend with your truck series on Fridays, Saturdays is our Xfinity series, and then Sundays, the big cup guys race. And on Friday of that weekend, there were a ton of wrecks. I think only 9 trucks out of the 33 that started finished the race. So I think there was a little bit of fear, I guess, throughout the garage and on track with a lot of the drivers.
Because they're hearing about all the crashes from the truck race. Yeah, they're like, hey, guys, take it easy.
Yeah, they saw the wrecks, and I guess they got scared. I don't know. I was kind of ready to get going and get, but, you know, you can't do it alone at a super speedway where it's drafting is so crucial
important,
for every
yeah.
car.
Is driving at Daytona, obviously it's such a famous and historical track. Mm-hmm. Is it different than driving at other tracks?
Yeah, it is, because I feel that that track's more of a chess match, because you're always waiting for the big wreck to happen, you know, because it's such a high speed track. It's big. It's over, you know, it's over 2 miles. So, you know,
one car, lap.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So you see quite the accidents when they do happen. So everybody kind of watches for that, and then everybody's just playing a giant game of fuel and position. So because it is kind of hard to pass at that kind of a track if you're not in the draft.
So Brendan, that's part of the game plan, is waiting for accidents and or, you know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, that really comes into play when you guys are on the track.
Yeah, it does a lot. You more or less try to work with people in a draft pack, and you try to find some friends out on the track to push towards the front, because two cars is faster than one and three is faster than two.
So that led to my next question. As far as your teammates, do you guys really do that? And how does that work where you assist somebody on the track?
It's kind of unfortunate for us because our team is a one-car team right now.
Okay.
So I just kind of have to try and find somebody that wants to be friends on the track in the moment, who's ready to, you know, ditch their teammate to go to the front.
I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I got to tell you real quick, Will Clark, I don't know if you know him, he used to play baseball for a long time.
Yeah.
When I was a rookie, he would come up and talk to us, and I'd always ask one of my other rookie friends, like, why does Will keep coming talking to us? So one day after practice, Cal Ripken Jr. goes, I saw you kind of curious on why Will would come out. And I said, yeah. He goes, he tries to make friends with all the pitchers so that eventually when you face him, he knows you won't pitch inside. You won't go at him because you guys are buddies, so you'll take him a little lighter.
Brilliant.
Do you do that with your guys that aren't your teammates, try to become friends with them so you're friends on the track?
Yeah, there's an element to that because, you know, with people that you're friendly with or that, you know, you work with on track, you're not as likely to run them as hard or race them as hard because you don't want to lose that garage partnership, if you will.
That's why I have no friends in life.
Amal's basically saying he's going to pitch you inside no matter what.
There you go. I mean, when it comes down to the last lap, then of course you're pitching everybody to the inside. You know, you have to. You want the win. If you're first, you're last, right?
Are you familiar with the term show friends?
Yeah.
No, because it ain't show friends. It's show
business. I'm not. What is show friends?
It's not show friends. It's show business.
Yeah, that's
show
right.
Show friends. Show business.
That's
so
right.
How far? Where were you in the 21-car pilot?
Oh, that was in the truck race. Our race was really clean. Yeah,
he was
so I was in
the
infield and watching, and I was going, wow, that's a lot of damage. That's, you know,
wow. Yeah. We don't want to be in that one.
No, I wouldn't want to have to fix those. So,
what does your schedule look like now? Talk to us about Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's become a bigger and bigger event in the racing world.
Oh yeah,
people don't need excuses to come here to enjoy NASCAR, and you guys have such a huge following nationwide and even internationally. Is this your first time driving in Vegas?
Yeah, this is actually the first time I've ever been to Las Vegas at all.
Wow!
So,
wow!
Yeah, I know.
And for your girlfriend as well?
Oh yeah. Oh
and
yeah. So we're
what was
find
it like
out
flying
like.
In with all the big lights?
Oh, I mean, it was wild because it just looked like a lot of nothing, and then boom, like there is Vegas. So we when we landed down in here, I was like, okay, I saw all the, you know, the big casino buildings, and you start to get a little, you know, starstruck. You're like, oh wow, this is everything that TV made it look like. So I can't wait to do it.
How does your equipment get here from Virginia?
It comes on a race hauler.
Okay.
So it left probably 2 days ago.
How long are you guys in town for?
We're in town through, we're in Vegas through the weekend, and then I'm actually staying down at the South Point Casino until we go race Phoenix, which I'll leave for that. But then I come back to Vegas to stay again until we go out to Fontana, California.
Nice. So this guy's definitely trying to be single.
Have you had a chance to go up to the raceway yet to check it out?
No, I'm getting ready to go up. Get settled in there and go pick up some of the team guys that rode in on the hauler.
What have you heard about Vegas in terms of a track and the crowd that comes out? And
Well, I heard it's, you know, a lot of betting, right? Isn't that the nature of this place?
Not well, bad. What are your odds, by the way?
I think I can. You can only bet on the field for our team because we're such a new team. You know, this is our first year, actually, as a family organization in the Xfinity Series. We're not old and established like the other teams, so we're kind of the new one on the block.
How many cars are in your...
So it's a one-car team, but we have a fleet of 12.
Okay, Emma?
No, I was going to say, Brandon, one of the things that's so impressive to me in NASCAR is the mental stress and strain that drivers go through. I always tell people, I've covered a lot of races at Texas Motor Speedway, and I always tell people, if you have the opportunity, go see a race from the infield. It's a different experience.
Oh, yeah.
But kind of take us through a little bit of the process. When you're in that car, in that race, you're going at breakneck speeds. You know, a split decision could be the difference between having a successful race or ending it early. Just what's it like in that situation?
It is stressful because then there's, you know, a lot of the decisions that I get to make inside the car are, like you said, they're very split second. So, there's not a lot of thinking time that goes into it. That's why you really have to rely on your team. Yeah, there is only one driver in the car that's making things happen, but there's so many people on the team that are making the entire event happen. So I rely heavily on like my crew chief Adam Brenner to make sure that car is right. It's not going to fall apart on track. You know, all tires are bolted on. but then I also really rely on my eyes in the sky, Tony Raines. He's actually the spotter for Cup Series champion Kurt Busch and then us. So he's got a lot of experience, and he's somebody that I actually turn to while I'm on track. To kind of get a little advice about what's going on, because not only are you trying to race for yourself and pick off positions, but you're also trying to find out, you know, the other cars that are out there that might be faster than you, what are they doing? Where are they at on track? You know, what kind of, you know, are they running the top of the track? Are they, you know, whatever it might be, he's always there to give that feedback and to kind of try and help keep me out of trouble.
That's the first time I ever went to a race. I didn't know that existed. So I did the whole thing. Did the infield. I did everything. We had a little suite. And he goes, let's go for a walk. Let's go up top to get the bird's eye. And there's a whole bunch of dudes spotting with their binoculars. I said, what is going on here? I didn't know that existed. I didn't know that was a part of a team. I thought that was fascinating. They're that important to you.
Oh, yeah. They're super important. And I actually got to spot one race out at a road course last year. And I didn't realize how aggressive some of the spotters get up there. You know, it's actually a pretty good fight for position, for viewpoints or vantage points. I didn't realize that. And so I just started jumping in between people, and they kind of looked at me like, who's this kid? You know, get him out of the way. Like, they start kind of like pushing you out of the way, and you just got to like shrug them off or something.
Jeffrey, that's why my application was rejected. I'm not tough enough to be up there.
I thought you'd push someone off, actually.
That I would do. It's not above... It's not beneath me to do that.
What's the scariest race that you've been in? What's really been close to fire, on fire?
I guess the scariest event to be a part of was actually back when I ran the truck series in Talladega. We were, you know, you're in the draft pack and you're running, you know, you're averaging above 180.
Huh. In a truck?
In a truck. And wow. A kid went up to, I guess, breathe the truck, which when you breathe a car on a super speedway, it means that when you're running in a pack and you're nose to tail, there's no clean air getting to your motor so that your motor can't cool off. So it runs too hot, and if it's too hot, it might blow up. You can't do that. So you got to bring your vehicle out and get some clean, cool air on it, cool it off for a second, come back in line. When you don't do that is heading into the corner, and that's exactly what that kid did. And when he did that, the line started to close. He kind of panicked. He got hit. When he got hit, he hit us in the right rear, and it put us face into the concrete.
Ooh.
So smacking concrete at 180. Concrete's a very strong structure, if anybody was wondering. It doesn't feel the best, you know, a little bit of whiplash, but, you know, we were right back in it the next week.
I know you're strapped into the truck or the vehicle very tightly. What other protective gear are you wearing for something like to take on an impact like that?
So outside of a 7-point harness that they fit us in, you know, you have, of course, the helmet. And then because of the accidents that are so famous in NASCAR, one of them being Dale Earnhardt Sr., who wrecked in Daytona, they implemented the Hans device, which is a head and neck restraint that hooks up. It sits on your shoulders, but it has two straps that hook to the sides of your helmet, and it keeps your head from moving forward a certain amount of
snapping off your shoulders,
yeah,
basically
yeah.
Right, from that whiplash effect,
yeah,
at such high G force and
yeah.
speed.
And I'll tell you, it works. I learned that face on into concrete. So
are there airbags in there?
No airbags. So it's bare bones down to the chassis.
Number 86, Brandon Brown in a Chevrolet Camaro for Brandon Built Motorsports this weekend at Las Vegas Speedway. We're going to be rooting for you, kid. We're going to be out there cheering you on. You're listening to Vegas Nonstop here on 920 The Game. You can also find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Alexa, and go to our website at VegasNonstop.com. We're going to take our first commercial break. Come on back with Josh Towers and Amal Shah and talking baseball. Stay right where you are.
Awesome.
Jonathan Scott with Vegas Nonstop here at 920 The Game. Also on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and Alexa by Amazon. Go to our website at VegasNonstop.com. Joining us in studio, former Major League Baseball pitcher Josh Towers, sports analyst Amal Shah, and our co-host Jeffrey with a G. Line one, go ahead. Bryce Harper bringing his superstar firepower to the Phillies. Multiple sources have told MLB.com on Thursday that the Phillies and Harper have agreed to a 13-year, $330 million contract pending a physical. Club has not confirmed the deal. Jeffrey with the G-Line 1, go ahead. What do you have to say?
It has since been confirmed. It is a 13-year, $330 million deal. For me, the interesting part is there's no opt-out clause. It's kind of... You don't see deals that long with no opt-out clause on them. I guess that was sort of like the feather in the cap for the Phillies. Like, they have him for as long as they want him. You know, Bryce, obviously, local hero here, very well known. Only 26 years old, but he does have 7 years of Major League Baseball on that body. You know, the chances of him playing throughout that contract, 13 more years, is not likely. But he does join a very young, talented team. And joins a lot of the other offseason moves that the Phillies have made with Rey Almuto behind the plate, Dave Robertson, who I think is going to do great in middle relief, bringing in a veteran like Andrew McCutchen. And let's be honest, they're playing in the NL East, so I mean, they're going to have the run of that division for a long time.
Yeah. I got to agree with you a little bit. I mean, hold on. Look at Nelson Cruz.
Be still
the last
my heart. No, exactly.
I mean, he's 39 years old, and he's, you know, 40-plus every year in all the RBIs, and he's raking. I think the no opt-out, I think it's fantastic. I think, to me, it shows that Bryce wants to be somewhere and doesn't want to opt out and go anywhere. He can easily opt out like Alex Rodriguez did or like Nolan Arenado has the opportunity to do if he does well and re-sign it. And he said, no, listen, I want to stay here. I want to be here. I'm going to sign a 13-year deal. He also added 3 years to where he's never going to get another contract again.
Correct.
If he did do a 10-year deal at 36, once again, Nelson Cruz, 37, 38, 39 now, fantastic. There's another contract there. So I think what it does is it shows a lot of loyalty on Bryce's behalf. I think it's fantastic. I love it. I love the kid. And he's going to the Hall of Fame as a Philly.
Most lucrative free agent contract signed in American professional sports history.
Depending how you look at it, yes, obviously $330 million, five more than Giancarlo Stanton's
four years ago with the Marlins.
Yeah, his 13 and 325, and then obviously the annual value.
Not near Arenado's.
It's fantastic. Not near Arenado's, and that was
Arenado's
a huge deal.
Better player,
bro. He's so good, and then not near Manny's as well. But the Padres knew they had to overpay Manny. They were fighting a battle against themselves.
Listen,
that's okay.
I love both players, and clearly they were the cream of the crop during this free agent season. But when it comes to playing baseball, I love what Bryce brings to the field because he's a gamer. He lays it on the line every night, every play. My concern is how long will his body hold up playing that kind of baseball?
That's what I was going to say, too. So it didn't matter whether he's playing college baseball for a couple of years, minor league baseball, or the last 7 years he's been in the major leagues. None of that matters. Baseball is baseball. It's not really that, like, Brandon, we just had in here, he gets run into concrete walls, right? Like, it doesn't take that kind of toll on your body, and he's an outfielder, so there's a little bit more give with him.
Well, no, listen, that's one of the things you have to respect and appreciate about Bryce is the intensity with which he plays with is an incredible talent. There's no denying that. But when you combine that with his effort and his energy, I think that's what makes him a generational talent, and that's why you see him being rewarded with a 13-year, $330 million deal. Now, I may not be as sold on the Philadelphia Phillies as Josh is. I don't know about you, Jeffrey. But
I love that. I think they're a young team with a bright future. They need a couple more arms in that rotation.
Yeah, I think they're fine with their starting rotation. Concern for me is still defensively, and I still don't understand the signing of Andrew McCutchen.
Oh,
that makes zero sense to me. I actually said on air today, you know, did he show up with an Uzi at the negotiation? I mean, how else could he have gotten 3 years?
He had to.
Yeah, there's no way. Exactly.
I told you. If you would have told me he was a minor league free agent and signed a deal, I would have been, all right, that makes sense.
I agree.
You get $50 million. I'm as confused as I've ever been in my whole life with this deal. No idea how McCutchen got that money.
So you guys are saying he's pretty much done at this point at 32?
I mean, he can't play defense. He's god-awful in the outfield. I don't know. I hope he's not.
Listen,
he can't DH on the Phillies.
No, half the year. He's a decent guy, but that's immaterial to the situation. I don't understand it. I'm telling you right now, nobody was going to give him a three-year deal. Nobody would have given him more than a one-year deal, and I don't believe it would have exceeded a max of $10 million. Philadelphia just paid this guy 3 years, $50 million. It makes zero sense. 16.6 per year average. It might be even a little bit higher towards $17 million. And this is where I think some of the decisions you see in baseball are absolutely perplexing in terms of when you're looking at a team and the decisions they're making long-term. You're like, these guys who are doing this, you can tell have never run a business or own a company. Because if you have, you would never make this type of...
Or your shareholders or board would throw you out.
Well, there's no question, but here's the thing. Bryce, you can justify it because of the talent, and he can put...
he puts butts in seats.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And advertising dollars and all the things that go into in a town like Philly.
If Andrew McCutchen walked down the street right now and 10 people saw him, 9 wouldn't know who he is.
This is why whenever you make a bet and tell me how much, this is why I listen to you. It's 16.6666, and you knew that. But look, you see all his attention to numbers?
I don't doubt his numbers at all.
Not one.
I've been doing this with him a long time,
when he says do something, you do it. That's right.
He's on point.
I love it.
I agree with you. The McCutchen deal makes no sense, and you added so much to the cap with that $50 million, knowing you were going after a player like McCutchen. Now, it's funny.
They're still under the
luxury tax.
Even with it,
so McCutchen's, Harper's numbers next year is 17, and then like 22 or 24, and then...
Did I hear that 20, like Manny's 20 is a signing bonus, and so salary next year is $10
million? Correct.
Okay.
$20 million signing, $10 million next year, and then I think he jumps to 25 or 26 for the next 7 years, and then whatever. But here's the thing. Manny's going to go to San Diego, and he's going to be a big fish in a little pond.
As far as...
He doesn't have the surrounding talent, I think, that that Philadelphia has.
Yeah.
I don't think he went there. I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't think he went there to maybe win a championship.
I'll see your Phillies and raise you. He still lives in San Diego.
True.
A little bit different, though, right? Because now you're talking about a pitcher-friendly park, so they don't have to invest quite as much money as, let's say, the Nationals do on pitching or somebody like that, or the Phillies would have to do. So you can have more average players become more than average performers as far as pitching, but you need offense. And so I see what they're doing with Hosmer. I see what they're doing with Manny. I see what they're hoping this Tatis kid can do. They're trying to bring offensive pieces into a play that it's not an offensive-friendly part because pitching, once again, they have a great catcher in Hedges.
Yes.
So he handles his staff.
Because
81 games a year are played at that park, they're figuring out how to win majority of those games.
True.
And so it's a little bit different than some places. Obviously, Philadelphia, that's you rake.
And obviously, Arizona and the Dodgers got worse over the offseason. So they're going to have a better opportunity to at least vie for the division.
Hold on one second. Why do you say the Dodgers got worse?
They got rid of almost everybody. Kershaw's done at the top of that rotation.
That's different from an injury situation. But when you look at this team, I don't necessarily agree that they've gotten worse. They added Pollock from the Arizona Diamondbacks.
I like Pollock. He's a great player.
Joe Kelly.
Every day.
I like Joe Kelly at the back end of that bullpen. You put him in the eighth inning in front of Kenley Jansen. He doesn't have to be the man. He just has to be.
Kelly was unbelievable in Boston last year.
Absolutely.
I mean, I was very sad to see him go.
Look, the Dodgers have won 6 straight division titles. I think it becomes 7. Now, the big question mark for me is when we get to the postseason, how has he become in terms of, and I'm talking about Kershaw, health-wise? And that's the biggest question mark you have with the Dodgers. Look, I'm going to tell you right now the team that's going to win the National League, okay? I told you the Boston Red Sox last year were going to win the World Series. No, the Chicago Cubs.
Oh, here we go.
Come on.
Here
we go.
I'd love to
come
hear
on.
That.
Here we go.
With the
here we go, Cubbies.
They might
here
not
we
even
go.
Get out of their own division.
Well, you know what? They may not, but they may also win the pennant. Here's why.
Yeah, I agree. Milwaukee should win that division.
No. Listen,
what?
Here's the thing.
St. Louis is walking away with that.
One of the great pitchers of all time that is very underrated is John Lester. This guy's a big game, big time pitcher.
And he was good last year, too.
He was outstanding last year. And
you
then,
know who else was good last year? Clayton Kershaw with his 2.97 ERA.
Listen, Clayton Kershaw is
and
once
he did what he always does in the postseason.
No. Listen. Clayton Kershaw is a once a generation pitcher. There's no arguing that.
Is that why he doesn't get as much respect as I think he does? Remember, he's had over a three. He's never had a 3 year, right?
Right.
Like 2.97 was his highest. Over that one time, it was his rookie year. Everything's been under a three. And like, do we start expecting too much out of him? Because what he's done has been amazing.
Well, I think the problem is the criticism, and it's somewhat warranted,
yeah.
comes in the postseason.
Correct.
If you are a big-time pitcher, and I'm going to point to a guy you pitched against. To me, one of the great big-time pitchers, two of them, Pedro Martinez.
Yes. Oh, he was legit.
Pedro, you know what? The best performance of Pedro's career to
against
me was
the Yankees.
No, was Game 5 in Cleveland in the AL
no
Division
hit for
Series.
Six innings.
It's exactly right.
In relief.
I mean that, and then of course John Smoltz is another guy. Clayton Kershaw, for as dominant as he has been in the regular season, he needs to deliver at that level in the postseason. And there are two games I point to where he failed just critically. One against the St. Louis Cardinals, and then the other one
against... You're talking about this past season.
2 years ago, actually, against the Cardinals.
In the NLCS.
Yeah, and then the other one against the Houston Astros in Game 5 of the World Series. You know, he's got to be able to deliver. He's a big-time pitcher. But I think, Josh, your guy, Yu Darvish, is now the number three starter. You got mm-hmm. Cole Hamels at two. I love Cole Hamels. He's going to go out. He's going to give you an ERA.
You got Lester and Hamels one and two. Left.
Yeah, and then you've got, of course, you've got Yu Darvish as the number three. Cool. Yu Darvish is probably the best three pitcher at number three in the big league.
Yu Darvish had the shoulder injury.
He's feeling pretty good right now. Everything's good.
He always does
coming
a preseason, and then he'll pitch maybe
110
innings.
Who's running out that rotation 4 and 5? Who am I missing?
All right, listen.
Because I'll tell you what.
In Chicago?
Lester's been great.
Yeah.
Okay, and Cole Hamels was good when he came over there but was god-awful with Texas. So you tell me he just didn't want to play in Texas?
Well,
you
the ballpark is very not hitter-friendly. I mean, pitcher-friendly.
With everything that's going on in that division and in baseball, you're telling me Lester, Cole Hamels, and Yu Darvish is it? Yu Darvish is the best one of all three.
Hendricks is rounding out that
Excuse
rotation.
Excuse me?
Oh, I like him.
I do, too. I think he's a three over Darvish.
Wait, hold on a minute. I got to go back to something Josh
just
said.
You don't like me saying that over Lester? Lester's
so
pretty good.
Josh had a bet last year.
What was the bet?
Over under 12 and a half wins for Yu Darvish.
He got zero.
this is like stealing from these guys. You know, he's my boy, so I'm not going to make him pay me lunch or anything like that. Plus, I'm the cheapest date in town.
But I'll tell you this. Okay, professional athletes, most competitive guys in the room. If he had won, you're taking him to lunch, believe me.
I don't mind. Listen, but I don't lose bets like this. I don't mind. I would have taken him anywhere he wanted.
What else do you like about the Cubs?
I think Chris Bryant bounces back. I think he's going to have an MVP type of season. What's that?
Great. He's going to have a great year.
He's going to have a great year.
What about Schwarbs?
Oh, he's god awful. He's in Japan in 2 years. I've
been hearing about this kid for 4 or 5 years.
So this is his first one back. I told you within 4 years he'll be in Japan. The guy's terrible.
You think he's done?
I just don't think he's good.
Just a pinch hitter.
And when it comes time to have to pay him, they're not going to pay him because they realize how bad he is.
I agree. I think the Chicago Cubs moving forward will take a much more cautious approach to paying players unless it's a talent like Chris Bryant because of the albatross of a contract that Jason Hayward has become for them.
I was going to say, do you think it's already started?
Yes.
Because, they put all this stock where they did not trade Schwarber when they could have got a lot. Everybody wanted him that year he was out. And they held on to him, and then they're realizing he wasn't it. They gave Hayward $187 million, and I would realize that was $182 too much. I think that now that they're making these mistakes, and now they're starting to – they gave Yu Darvish that big contract, and Yu didn't play last year. He got hurt.
Yeah.
So I think they're starting to get – then that's probably why they haven't gotten negotiations with Chris yet.
I mean, they were calling Schwarbs the next Babe Ruth.
They were.
I mean,
I'm saying. When you watch him play, it's like – but who's saying this? Is it a fan?
I think you bring up a great point with Darvish. I'm sorry, with Bryant. The reason why you don't want to negotiate with him yet, Josh, you know you're going to have to pay him a premium, correct? So even if he becomes MVP 5 straight years, you're still better off paying him on what that market value is than instead of paying him now if you don't genuinely believe he's legitimate as good as we think he is.
Well, I was saying, like, based off of what happened last year with him, right? So battled some injuries and he didn't have the year that we got used to, by the way, because, I mean, he was Rookie of the Year and then MVP. 106 hits. He only had 13 homers. Huge drop off. 52 RBIs. Chris Bryant in 102 games.
I was
going to
say he didn't
have a great year.
He was hurt last year.
Yeah, that's exactly.
But if he goes back to the guy that we got to know early, 26, 39, 29, they're going to have to pay him a lot of money.
I don't disagree with that, but one of the reasons why I don't have a problem with paying Chris Bryant is twofold.
He's young?
Forget the youth. Number one, he's a professional. He's a great player.
Great kid.
Number two, I like how he represents the organization as a whole in Major League Baseball. That is taken into consideration when you're paying guys big money.
He's 27 right now.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's because he never went to college.
He's older than Harper.
University of San Diego.
Yeah.
His dad, Mike, was on with us last week. Of course, he's local. He gives kids lessons. We've got Josh Tower in the studio. I'm Al Schott. Jeffrey with the G Line 1. You're listening to Vegas Nonstop here on 920 The Game. Find us on the web at VegasNonstop.com, on iTunes, Google Play, and Alexa. We're going to take a short commercial break and come on back to 920 The Game.
Woke up, fell out of bed. Dragged a comb across my head. Found my way downstairs and drank a cup. And looking up, I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat. Made the bus in seconds flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. And somebody spoke and I went into a dream.
Jonathan Scott on Vegas Nonstop here on 920 The Game, also on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and you can find us certainly on our website at VegasNonstop.com. Couple things going on. The Las Vegas Philharmonic has something going on, and they're celebrating their 20th anniversary here in Las Vegas. Something called Three in Concert at the Smith Center, where they're going to do mashups with classical music. It's going to be really kind of amazing. You're going to have Beatles and Bach. You're going to have Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses mashed up with Mahler, Vertigo, Banjo Love, Eleanor Rigby with Mozart. So it's going to be wild. Go to the lvphil.com for more information. And that's over at the Smith Center for the Performing Arts. In studio, former Major League Baseball pitcher Josh Towers and sports analyst Amal Shah and Jeffrey with a G Line 1. Go ahead. Talking about baseball and Bryce Harper. $330 million, which seems to be the most lucrative free agent contract signed in American professional sports history. Just beat out Manny Machado, signed with the Padres just last week. Second largest contract in professional sports history, eclipsing the 13-year, $325 million contract extension from Giancarlo Stanton, signed with the Marlins in 2014. But there's other things going on. The neophyte question for me is, why did the Nationals let him go? Was it just the money?
It's not that they let him go. They offered
the free agent. Why wouldn't they match it?
We just talked about, Mo and I were just talking about this on the way in. They didn't let him go. They wanted to get him. They offered him 10 years. $300 million, which is great. It's $30 million a year. I think that he would have accepted it. However, they wanted to defer $100 million until he was 62, and that was the deal breaker.
Yeah.
Well, that's a big deal. By the way, I got to give kudos to Josh. Josh called this before it even happened. He said last March 2018, he said Bryce Harper to the Phillies.
Wow. Yeah. When most people had him going to the Dodgers.
Well, most people didn't even know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, Josh called it a
let me ask you this. We all know that the Dodgers and the Giants, obviously, the Giants came out today and said they offered him a 12-year whatever deal. I think they're trying to save face. But why wouldn't he go to the West Coast, being a West Coast kid, close to Vegas, close to his family?
The Dodgers, from what I get, wanted to offer him basically like 4 years and somewhere around $40 or $45 million a year, which is fantastic.
Wow. What?
Yeah, it was a great deal, but he wanted security. He wants long term. He wants to be somewhere.
Boris said today he was given instructions to find him a place for the rest of his career.
Yes, that was it. And so 4 years, although the money was amazing, he wanted the security of the rest of his career. And I think that people got to understand that. I know it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I heard 45. I also heard 40. I mean, that's
40 seems a little more accurate to
me. Right, and that's a ton of money for
Boris
4 years.
Boris threw out 45.
Yeah. Okay. So, but no, Bryce didn't want that. Like I said, and I don't think the Giants could get there. They were at 12, but I think they were at 12 and slightly
like 300.
Maybe
300.
Yeah.
Let me address your question. Look, Josh has him going to Cooperstown. I'm still on the fence on that. I still think Nolan Arenado is the second best player in baseball. The reason why I don't believe he was going to go to San Francisco is because
currently Arenado is the second best player in baseball.
It's not even close. It's not even close.
And Bryce is number one.
Mike Trout. Have you ever heard of him?
Yeah. What about Betts?
Mookie Betts is up there, but he hasn't done it consistently. Yeah, Nolan Arenado. Nolan Arenado's been in the league 6 years. He's won a Gold Glove 6 years. He's the second player in baseball history to have 35 homers and 35 doubles in the same season 4 consecutive years.
Yeah, when you're talking about the best in the game, you got to go off of consistency, one or 2 years.
Mookie Betts is going to eventually
great,
get there.
But yeah. Mike Trout and Nolan Arenado are on a different level.
These guys are, I mean.
And neither Bryce or Machado are on that level. Well, not Machado. Bryce isn't on that level?
No.
In some areas they are, but not quite.
All around game, you look at Nolan Arenado, to me, is the best infield defender in baseball. Mike Trout is a phenomenal player. He's a 5-tool player. These guys are unbelievable. But I didn't believe he was going to go to San Francisco because I never thought he'd be able to put up the offensive numbers that would get him into Cooperstown.
Park.
Yes. I didn't think he would be a Barry Bonds repeat, and I didn't think he would be that. But, listen, kudos to Bryce Harper for going where he wanted to, long-term deal, and he went to Philadelphia. I have a question for Josh, though. As a former player, and this is not a question necessarily about the city, but just in general, how do you think he fits in with that, Bryce, his personality, and with that tough fan base in Philadelphia? Because the expectation levels are going to be through the roof.
Oh, it's great, isn't it? Yeah.
And I think it's going to drive him.
That's what I'm saying. He's different when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Like, he wants that. He wants to be driven. He's not trying to shy away from anything. I can't say the same about Manny. I
agree.
I think that part of it, yes, is the unbelievable $300 million guaranteed. Here it is, brother, 30 a year. But it also, there's not as much pressure. There's like one media member in San Diego. We're in Philadelphia, New York, all these
Manny
places.
Manny went to a beautiful city with a lot of money to play on an average team.
I think
he's the guy that told everyone last year, I'm not that guy that hustles down to first.
I think Bryce is driven by the pressure. And like I said, I think his whole life he wanted to be a Hall of Famer, and I don't think anything that Philly offers can make him shy away from that.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Josh brought up a great point, is that Bryce has been talented for so long. He's like a LeBron James.
True.
That if he doesn't make the Hall of Fame, it's almost a disappointment. And it's rare, very rare in sports, you can say that about any player.
It's
you say it's Hall of Fame or bust.
To think when you say that out loud, it's crazy.
And the pressure. At 16 years old,
well, I think
on the cover of SI.
It's not just that. I think baseball provides a different type of pressure because, remember, there's no other sports going on when baseball is going on. And you are an individual player. In football, you can still hide behind offensive line plays bad if you're a running back, wide receiver, you don't have a good quarterback. In baseball, it's mano a mano every time you're out there against the pitcher. If you make an error defensively, it's on you. There are not 8 other players. Even though there's 8 other defensive players, it's still your fault if there's a problem out there in your position.
Could we call that the Billy Buckner factor?
By the way, I hate the fact that people get on Buckner for that, because let me tell you something. The Calvin Schiraldi had 2 strikes on Gary Carter and on Brian.
You guys really want to remind me of this?
There's so much more that came into that about blowing the game before.
Yeah, absolutely.
How about Bob Stanley? Hello?
That's what I'm saying. All these guys, they had chances. They were down. The Mets were down to their last
strike. Having such a good time tonight, guys. Thanks.
Kevin Mitchell, all these guys. I think it's so ridiculous. I just got to say this. It is so utterly ridiculous when people sit there and blame a guy like Bill Buckner. It's just asinine to me. To me, when people say that, they don't know sports.
He shouldn't have been in the game.
I know we're completely off topic now, but I'm so glad that he came back into the spotlight.
So am I.
Yeah, he
deservedly
ran
so had a great career and does not deserve to be judged by one play. And here's the thing, that was only Game 6,
and they were ahead in Game 7.
Yes,
yes, they were winning in Game 7,
yes,
4-3. Yes.
Thank you.
Listen, stop it. Let me tell you something. What have you guys won? Like 4 World Series in the last 15 years? The Celtics have won
enough.
A title. The Patriots have won 6 Super Bowls. The Bruins have won a Stanley Cup. My God, I'm from Cleveland, dude. We celebrate if somebody doesn't get killed.
Well, I think Buckner did the same thing when he was with the Cubs. He started with the Cubs. Well, I like that you said that the Cubs have a shot this year.
He was just joking.
Well, of course.
He just wanted to make me feel good.
Well, listen, all that talent, Joe Maddon is your coach. Of course, they're going to have a chance. I mean, that's a very talented team. Come on.
The division's
they're
good.
They're going to win 99.5 games. I mean, it's a given.
But here's a couple of plays, to get off topic a little bit. Aaron Barrett's long-awaited return to the Nationals. Significant?
If I knew who Aaron Barrett was.
I was going to say, I have no idea. Yeah. I was trying to think of who this
email.
Is.
I just pulled it off
the web. I don't
know
who that is.
I've never heard of the guy. I thought you guys would know.
Everything we love about the perseverance of people and the concept of teams. Who is this guy? Ryan Zimmerman, 31-year-old Barrett's first appearance.
He's some journeyman who's getting a shot at the show at 31.
He's coming back from Tommy John surgery. Great.
Okay, let's move on.
Leonis Martin and Danny Farquhar from
I actually
near
met
death
Tommy
to
John's.
Here's your boy, Nolan Arenado's extension.
Let's go to my man Troy Tulowitzki, because I know Josh and I are differing opinions on this.
Go ahead. Talking about Tulo.
We can have all the different opinions, but he still went yard against Marcus Stroman his first at bat back.
Was it against Stroman? I didn't know that. Oh.
Stroman, who's mad that he hadn't got offered an extension yet. He had 4 wins last year and a 6 ERA. Giving up homers at Tulo. I text Tulo and I said, "That's right." And I can't tell you what he texted me back, but he was pretty excited.
Do we customarily approve of shouting and peering at the opposing dugout as you round the bases following a home run in the exhibition season?
For Troy?
Yeah.
No, listen,
why, he was barking at the dugout?
No, he was excited about what happened. He's facing his old team who cut him loose. He understands now that I was saying this. I'm like, bro, they owe you $38 million, and they released you. They said that we'd rather not have you around and take $38 million and walk. Yeah. Like, if that doesn't piss you off, I don't know what would. And I think that he fully understands that. And so that's what he was saying. Like, he hit a home run off Stroman. Stroman likes him. They're friends. But he hit a home run off Stroman. His first at bat is off his old team, who told him to walk. Like, it doesn't get any more exciting than that for a player. Right.
The Blue Jays cut Tulo over the winter despite owing him $38 million over the next 2 seasons. If that's not an indictment of a player's present-day ability, nothing is. Tulo, who at one time was on the very short list of greatest players in the game, is now a man on a mission to make the Blue Jays pay for the crime. Not believing in him, it's a little overwrought, especially this early stage. And the dudes in the dugout obviously weren't the ones who made the decision on Tulo. What?
No, it was his buddy. But listen, you can't blame the Blue Jays. He really hadn't done much since he got there. He got hurt. He missed all year last year. He came into spring training, and I think they expected him to partially be ready, and he wasn't. Then he ended up having surgery. You can't be mad at the Jays for this by any means. But then again, from a player, like, you should take this personal.
Listen, there's a lot of things you take in sports personally, and sometimes it's a team saying goodbye to you.
Absolutely.
I want to talk about your Yankees.
I want to take a commercial break and then talk about his Yankees.
Oh, yeah, why they're my Yankees.
You're listening to Vegas Nonstop in studio. We've got former Major League pitcher Josh Towers, sports analyst Amal Shah, Jeffrey with the G-Line 1. Go ahead. My name's Jonathan Scott. You're listening to Vegas Nonstop on 920 The Game, also available on iTunes, Google Play, and at a theater near you. We're going to take a quick commercial break and come on back with more sports on Vegas Nonstop.
Sun, I say it's all right.
And we're back. Jonathan Scott with Vegas Nonstop here at 920 The Game. Also on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Alexa. You say Vegas, play Alexa, play Vegas Nonstop. Yes, Amal Shah.
I love that little intro back in. Second greatest musical act of all time. The Beatles.
Who would be the first?
There's only one.
The Rolling Stones.
No. Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson.
The greatest of all time.
That's the number one song, album of all time would be Thriller. Would be the number one selling LP, 33 and a third. Also in studio, former Major League Baseball pitcher Josh Towers. We're talking baseball. We haven't even talked about.
I don't know if that's still true about Michael Jackson,
either.
By the way.
I thought it was the Eagles.
33
the
and
Eagles
a third.
Greatest hits.
Yes.
Or...
I don't think so.
I think it is.
I think a
viewers,
newer,
what
I
do
think
you
a
think?
Newer
listeners,
artist recently broke it, like Lady Gaga or something.
Drop us a note. To go to Vegas Nonstop and send
for
us
the
a
most
note.
Albums ever sold. Yeah.
What's your favorite LP, 33 and a third of all time? Mine would be Cheech and Chong, Big Bamboo, because you could roll on the album cover. Album covers.
You can roll on any album cover.
Well, it was a big rolling paper from Big Bamboo. Anyway. We've talked trades. You want to talk hockey at all? You want to talk about our Golden Knights? You want to talk about which players do the Golden Knights miss the most and least when they're out?
Wait, what were you going to say about the Yankees?
Yeah.
What's funny is that in the offseason, the Yankees are normally involved in a lot of these high, visible free agents. I have a lot of Yankee friends that are very upset that they weren't in on Bryce Harper. Or Machado, actually.
They got the best overall team in all of baseball, and they had a great year last year. Now they got even better. They don't need Manny Machado. Bryce Harper. They had to pay all that money to get those two guys they don't need. You just got Troy Tulowitzki for free. So if he turns out to be anything, this is fantastic. You got one of
You like Tulo and Pinstripes?
I love him because he's free. And if it goes back to being anything remotely close to
what you're paying him, he's still a threat.
And then two years, $20 million on DJ LeMahieu. Are you kidding me?
That's a steal.
You get the biggest steal in all of baseball.
That is one of the most underrated acquisitions all year. And I want to address a couple things. First of all, it is Thriller, number one selling album of all time. Number two is actually Eagles' Greatest Hits. And number three is Eagles' Hotel California.
Wow.
And by the way, Josh, and number four, they got James Paxton.
I win.
And Josh,
that show from Seattle.
Yeah. That Josh, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. It's a little bit early for you to be drinking. The Yankees are not as good as you think they are.
Thank you.
Okay, they don't have to be as good as I think they are.
Cocktails.
Who's better?
Who's the number one pitcher?
Cubs.
Severino. Who's number two?
I still think Boston will end up signing Craig Kimbrell. And I think they'll bring him back.
Boston will have to get bullpen help, otherwise they're done.
I agree with that completely.
Because they're
going
to need their starters to go to nine.
Lost Joe Kelly. Big loss.
That's a big loss.
Your eight and nine guys are gone. Yeah.
No, I agree. The middle of the pack now is very, very weak.
Wait, hold on a second. To answer your original question, the Houston Astros.
No. Sorry. The answer's no to that.
Well, listen, I can't help it if you're wrong and you can't concede defeat. Let's move on.
And they got nobody to catch the baseball for those guys. They're going to struggle so bad with Chirinos catching. Pitchers are not going to enjoy it.
Well, I can't disagree with that. By the way, I
love the fact
they did get good.
We never actually talk about how important a great catcher is in command.
That's why the Phillies are so good.
I agree.
There's nobody better to ask than a former starting pitcher.
I agree that. I totally agree. And we don't talk about it enough how they're the quarterbacks on the field all the time with the pitchers, with the defense, with everybody.
Right. And once again, everybody's heard how much I love JT Realmuto, but that's the difference maker in him. The guy can hit. It's a complete bonus that he can hit like an all-star because of what he means to the team. In the Phillies, I think that was the best thing they ever did was pick him up.
Robertson.
Who's the greatest catcher of all time, in your opinion?
Defensive or offensive?
It's got to be Yogi Berra, right?
I would say Pudge Rodriguez.
I love
Pudge. See, Pudge couldn't catch, though. Like,
I know. He
wasn't
call a game.
The guys enjoy that.
What about Johnny? What about Bench?
That's what I heard. I heard he was awesome. I heard Johnny Bench was awesome. I don't know.
It's hard to answer that question. I'm going to tell you the guy for me is Yadi Molina in terms of what he
does. I was just thinking, was it eight rings for Yogi Berra? Is that what it is? Something's got to go good. Yeah, 10? Okay, my bad.
I think only...
It's 10.
I think only Russell has more rings with 11.
Yeah, great things have to happen for a catcher to have 10.
Did you ever get into it with a catcher that he's calling a sign and you don't want it? I mean, what's the worst that's ever happened?
Wait, more than just shaking him off?
Yeah, he puts it down and he's like, no. And he kind of pauses, and he puts it down again, and you go, no. And he puts it down a third time, and then you just see him put his head down and his hand up. And he's like, here he comes.
and you don't want to mess with the catcher.
Just so we're clear, Bull Durham, where he tells him what's coming, that has happened many times. Oh, you're going to shake me off?
Okay. He's coming at you?
Do you remember his line afterwards?
Here comes a fastball.
Anything leaving the park that quick has a stewardess on it.
I've had catchers tell hitters what's coming because they're mad.
Wow.
Good for you. I love that.
I think it's great.
No, I love that.
I'm sorry. That's utter disrespect.
No.
Hold on a minute. The objective is to win the game. You don't sit there and tell the opposition what pitch is coming. That is ridiculous.
What if that one at bat doesn't have an outcome on the end of the game?
You know what happens in situations is
it's about respect.
It brings our relationship closer afterwards.
I get it.
Because I got a lot of leverage to argue with him with.
Josh, let me just tell you right now, if I were catching you, I would never, ever give the signal away to the opposing hitter.
I appreciate you for that.
That's just ridiculous. To me, listen, every at-bat counts. It drives me nuts in baseball. There's 162 games, but I always point to the 93 season when the Dodgers and Giants came down to one game at the end of the year. Every at-bat matters. That's why I love baseball, because you can actually quantify it based on an individual play.
More than any other sport.
Absolutely.
Are the Expos coming back?
Oh, please, I hope
so. Rumor on the street.
Oh, speaking of Expos, Gary Carter.
It is, right?
Catcher.
Yes, Gary,
catcher. Yep. And for me, Veritek.
Veritek was...
As a catcher.
Smart.
Yes. Catcher.
He was smart. He game planned well. He did all the studying.
He's a true captain, catcher, whatever you want to call him. I love Tech.
By the way, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. I'm at the gym, and I'm sitting there doing squats, and we've got weights on your thighs, and I'm dying, and I barely have any weights on there, right? I'm sitting there thinking, how do these guys do this for 9 innings every day for 140 games a year?
Squatting a couple hundred times a day.
15 years.
That's why people...
No knees.
The misconception is catchers' careers are short. The reality is they're not. And the guys who don't have the knee savers, like you said, they squat all day. Their legs are so strong. Their lower back's so strong. They actually last longer. That's the one thing that athletes should all do, is squat. But catchers,
they're tough, man.
Ooh, buddy, yes.
Preseason in full tilt. If you want to watch the Cubbies, Amore, Taste of Chicago on Durango between Flamingo and Twain. We're going to be there next Friday. If you could stop by and say hi, have some pizza with us over at Amore. I want to thank our guests, former Major League Baseball pitcher Josh Towers, sports analyst Amal Shah, Jeffrey with a G, Line 1, go ahead. And, of course, NASCAR driver Brandon Brown for dropping in. My name is Jonathan Scott. Make sure and find us on our website at VegasNonstop.com. Like us and share us. Share us on Like Us on Facebook and social media, VegasNonstop.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Eat well and party hard, my friends.